Hi everyone and welcome to Keyframe, the most animated podcast you'll ever see. Pretty shame you can't see it.
Yeah, I know.
This is beautiful animation. It's like Miyazaki level stuff going on, but you're only getting the audio. Sorry guys.
Yep.
Yes. Today on the show we have the samurai gunsmith over there, Mr. Dave.
Hello.
Or as we call him, Hattori Smith & Wesson. The lovely and stop-motion animated Ben.
Sorry, I was waiting for them to capture the frames for a second there. Very slow motion, stop motion.
Yes, I'm playing on me. Hello, I'm Rob. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good, yourself?
I'm no longer hungry because I've been fed, so I'm happy.
Okay.
I'm very simple. You know, as long as you feed me, I'm happy.
Full of food, I'm ready to talk animation.
Yes.
Anyway, we've got some news today.
Yes, we got all sorts of news today. We're going to start off with Attack on Titan.
Yes.
Right. Now, Attack on Titan is getting a live-action movie. We know that. It's got all sorts of things associated with it. It's got theme park stuff, manga, anime, toys,
it's a merchandising
costumes, everything
machine.
Like that. It's a merchandising machine.
In the Nintendo Direct this week, they did a little focus on the 3DS game that's coming out.
Now
getting released.
Hasn't it actually been released already in America?
No, it hasn't been released in the West at all yet.
Really?
Yeah, it's out in Japan, I believe, but now it's coming to a Western audience.
Okay. Attack on Titan. Of all the characters in Attack on Titan, which ones do you consider the most memorable?
Levi. I know a lot of Eren.
Kill every Titan.
Mikasa.
Yep.
Memorable characters, yeah?
Yeah.
So Levi, Eren, Mikasa, and probably Armin to a degree.
Meh.
To a degree.
He's just about.
No, Armin's important. Not everyone wants him to be important.
Yeah. It's just, he is. What about Hanji?
Hanji loves science.
But
everyone forgets about her,
don't they?
No, I don't think so. Well, I think she's not one of the first characters introduced, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, people don't have that initial...
Yeah.
Connection with them.
But it's not just that. I mean,
from about like the midpoint of the series onwards.
She's not there as kind of what's the word? She's never portrayed in the manga, at least anyway. She's never portrayed as a character whose importance to the story is, you know, is absolute. Levi's portrayed as a character whose importance is absolute because he's pretty much there in every single chapter.
No, Levi doesn't get introduced until the same point Hanji is.
No, after he's introduced, he's pretty much there for most of the chapters that follow.
She's about the same amount of appearances, really.
Not really. I mean, aside from once you move out to the bounds of the city, then you know her appearances drop.
What's her two Bean and something? You know the two titans that she has.
Yeah. The two titans that she treats like her own horribly tortured children.
Yeah. She's the only one that even tries to understand the things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there is a hook there.
There is a hook, and I'm actually glad that that what's happening is happening, because she's a character who really required more, more perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, you don't know why she's so fascinated with the Titans. You know, what in her life has driven her to this fascination. And she's basically an anomaly in a world where everybody either hates or fears the Titans. She's the only one who actually displays any kind of curiosity.
Yeah.
Which makes her stand out.
That's what I mean. There's a hook there. It's a little... It's got more legs as a series than Cooking with Potato Girl.
Yeah.
Because they are making...
Although I watched that. That would be amazing.
Yeah. They are making a TV series. It's going to be on Docomo's... I forgot what it's called.
So, Ben, Cooking with Potato Girl.
Cooking with Potato Girl would be amazing.
Should I submit that to...
Yeah, it's going to be on Docomo's DTV streaming service in August. And they're taking the woman who's playing her in the live-action movie. In fact, they're taking a lot of the cast from there. And they're actually using them in the TV series as well.
Okay, as that, voice actors.
No, it's TV series.
It's live-action TV series.
Is that what... I'm guessing they're... expecting the movie to do really well if they're already calling a TV series based off that world.
Yeah, it's Satomi Ishihara who's playing Hanji in the movie.
Mm-hmm. She looks spot on.
She is absolutely spot on.
She's got one of the most emotive character poses on the posters for it as well.
And the look on her face is basically Hanji straight away. But yeah, I actually think this is a good move, focusing on a character who really needed more, you know, more context.
She seems to have a lot more going on, like, personally than everyone else. She's studying stuff, she's asking questions. Everyone else seems to have the single motivation of kill all Titans.
Yeah. You know, don't understand them, just wipe them out. Execute the lot of them. I agree.
Well, it's survival, isn't it, mostly, that people aren't thinking anything more than surviving.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, one of the things that sparks her off in the story, and this is a bit of a spoiler, very, very small spoiler, but that whole bit where, you know, the new cadet, when he realizes that the Titan is actually someone he knows, you know, that's one of the things that sparks her off in all sorts of speculation after that.
I'd say the only issue I could think of it would be that if it's a spin-off, then as much as the character would like to explore the mysteries of this this universe, she won't be able to because it hasn't been revealed in the actual manga yet.
Ah, true.
Yeah.
You know, when filler can't go further than...
Yeah, they're working to the limitations of what the manga will allow.
Yeah.
Unless they go completely off on a tangent. I mean, the movie seems to have modern technology that isn't around in the... manga, so it's of a different
actually,
color.
In her character poster, she has a bazooka.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They don't tend to have RPGs in that sort of era of equipment they're carrying.
Yeah.
Then again, they don't tend to have 3D maneuver gear in that sort of era of real life. But still, you get what I mean. It's sort of an alternative take on Attack on Titan, so they can go a bit askew with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. On April the 25th, at the Evangelion World theme park, because it has its own theme park as well, they're actually having a new event. It's the projection and mapping show starring Unit 1.
Okay.
The story begins with an inspection team visiting the Fuji Q Highlander base with Misato and Shinji. Suddenly, an alarm breaks out. An angel is approaching. What kind of foe is Nerve up against this time? And will they be able to keep Unit 1 under control?
Okay, cool. So when you say 3D project, is this like a...
They're going to be using lasers to project onto the theme park's giant Unit 01 model using six projectors that have been mounted on the ceiling and on the floor. The story is original and can only be seen there.
I've seen stuff like this before. They did a lot of stuff like the things like the Olympics. They have this where they have like a sculpture that they project bits onto, and it actually looks quite cool.
Yeah. They've also remodeled their roller coaster, Takabisha, into Eva Bisha, which sounds too much like Eva Bishi for me. You know, it's now a Neon Genesis Evangelion themed roller coaster. The cars resemble Unit 01, and the announcements music. Building and monitors along the queue will all be revamped to evoke the world of Evangelion.
Is this anything to do with, well, it's not an anniversary year for them, but 2015 is the year that the original
was placed.
Yeah.
So I want to see the Evangelion log flume where you plumb it into LCL. Just orange liquid everywhere.
No. Can you imagine if they did the Spear of Longinus ride, where you basically it was like a log flume launched from a catapult?
There'd be a few health and safety risks there.
Here's the photograph of you at first impact.
Yes, that could be the end of it.
Actually, that would be a great souvenir.
Yeah,
like here's us and the family. Here's us having a nice meal. Here's me during first impact.
Oh no! I've just had a better idea. You know those cannons that they use at the to launch people. Basically, you have like a big foam Velcro wall at the other end, you know, and have you wearing like all sorts of padding and fire you out of a cannon called Spear of Longinus. Then it's first impact for you against the wall.
Relabel any velvet rope sealing people off AT fields.
Yes.
Yeah. We're on to something here.
It could work. It could definitely work. It's a million-dollar idea.
Yeah. Until we get sued because everything sounds really hazardous to people.
Yes, this is true. Anyway, moving on. Batman.
Batman.
Yes.
The 1960s
Batman. Burt Ward and Adam West have teased that they might be, you know...
Oh, no, it's happening.
Is it definitely...
DC... DC Informer have said definitely happening.
So they are reprising their roles as Batman and Robin for the animated 1960s Batman.
Yeah, I mean, there's some precedent for this, as the Batman 66 line of comics has been doing very well.
Yeah.
And
I've got to ask, the Batman 66 comics, which I haven't had a chance to read yet, do they have the sound effects in?
Oh, does yeah, they have the like the thwacks and yeah. Yeah, it's very much a representation of the 1960s anime, like live action series. But they have been going down very well. And in fact, DC have been talking about it, and they think that people are fatigued by the Nolan Batman kind of portrayal. You know, the dark, edgy.
Yeah, like, it's too serious.
But and as I said, that's been doing
very
well.
Where is she?
Lego Batman's been doing great.
Oh, God, yes.
In fact, he's getting his own animated movie.
Darkness in the basement. No parents.
Now, that version of Batman is getting a Lego movie.
Yeah, he's getting his own animated movie.
As well as the sort of the game version of Lego Batman is getting has movies as well.
Yeah.
So, like, Lego Batman's huge.
No, Lego Batman is just brilliant.
So, yeah, DC are saying that this could be, like, a resurgence for silly Batman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, silly Batman was always... I don't mind serious Batman. I like serious Batman, but, you know, serious and then serious.
I think having the option is nice.
Yeah, because the thing is, there's nothing in Batman comics that makes him silly except for Joker, and Joker's too sadistic to be like outright silly. Whereas in Superman, you got Mr. He just appears and basically just starts upsetting Superman by doing all sorts of random things. Yeah.
Oh yeah, silly Batman on the rise.
Yeah, yep. Silly Batman is good Batman.
The Dark Knight Rises.
Yep. I hope they've still got that computer where they stick stuff in and it gives them a clue to what to do. Like, rather than giving them an answer, like, oh, it's some pink noodles. What could this mean?
That shark was really pulling my leg. The Joker. It happened at sea. C is for cat. Yes. Oh, this all adds up to a fine riddle. The Riddler. That's from the movie.
Yeah, it is.
Where they work out the villains have teamed up, basically.
Yeah.
It is.
By nothing.
Like... Do you ever think that maybe everyone thinks he's the world's greatest detective because he's working all this stuff out, but it's really just dumb luck and he's stupidly making assumptions that just happen to be right?
Most likely.
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
To be honest, you don't have to be the world's greatest detective in his world.
No, tell the truth, detective work in Batman's world really consists of punching people in the face.
You could just have a list of themed villains... And the exhibits that the Gotham Museum is going to have that week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, they've got an Egyptian-themed exhibit. I'll keep an eye out for King Tut.
Yep.
Well, doesn't Flash kind of take the mickey out of that a little bit? Because he's got his own museum with all of his kind of heroics on display. And all the villains are so annoyed at it, they keep trying to attack it and destroy it. It's like the Flash is actually quite clever. Instead of letting them go around his city, you know, attacking random places, he built a place for that annoyed them enough so they'd keep attacking that one place.
That's quite a good idea. Like,
I've taken all of these attacks and robberies and put them into one easy to handle place.
Yeah, here's a picture of me hitting that boomerang fella in the face. Here's another picture of me hitting that boomerang fella in the face.
So you
basically just have like wall of him hitting him in the face.
Heroes just set up a few places, like the National Scapegoat Bank.
Yeah. Basically.
Yeah.
There's no money in it. Just make it look like there is.
Yeah.
You know, or do what Flash did and just set up a museum where he basically humiliates and emasculates all of the people he's beaten.
This is how people suck the museum.
Yeah, basically. And it annoys them enough that they don't want to attack anywhere else. They just want to get rid of that place. It's a clever idea. I'm surprised Batman never thought of it.
Like we said, he's not as smart as people think he is.
Yes, he's not. He's not. Anyway, moving on. Knights of Cydonia is getting its second TV series. This one's an interesting one because it's Netflix who were...
Yeah, Netflix funded the creation of the first series. Mm-hmm. So the fact that it's now going on is popular enough to give a second series.
Yeah, it means
it's a really nice series.
It is beautiful, but it also means that there's somebody at who's a decision maker at Netflix, who's a huge fan of Blame, the manga Blame. Nobody's read it?
No. I've read the manga Knights of Cydonia, and I think you could be a fan of that.
No, the manga Blame is by the guy who wrote Knights of Cydonia. It's one of his early ones, and it was more famous until Knights of Cydonia got an anime. Anyway, enough of that.
Yeah, so the fact that it's getting a second series shows that Netflix might be a viable way of getting your anime out there.
Well, not just anime. Western animation's been very successful on there. Things like Archer and BoJack Horseman have found, like...
Of course, BoJack was an original series as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that got a lot of critical praise.
And the next series of Archer is going to air simultaneously on Netflix.
Oh, really? So that means that the creators of Archer obviously put his as an important platform as actual TV. So it's showing a shift on how animation can be presented. It might be easier to create and pitch an idea to Netflix than a TV presenter, a TV studio.
Well as that, children's animation's done very well on it. Turbo, the one about the snail, was a Netflix exclusive, apparently has done well enough on Netflix to justify toy lines and things.
Yeah.
Which, that's actually really good, because the traditional model of children's animation was that merchandise is how you...
Oh, yeah, make a show that can make toys. It's the reason Transformers is still around, it's the reason My Little Pony's about, it's reason for, like, a lot of kid shows.
Yeah.
But until recently, Netflix has only really been seen as a way of putting out, like, repeats or, like, archived shows.
You have, like, it was mostly... old shows being put up so you can see it, and then like...
And they don't affect merchandise, do they?
Yeah. So it's not like me watching the original X-Men cartoon really makes any difference to their budget. But me watching the latest series of a show that's coming out at the time, that makes a big difference. That packs their viewership, and like I said, kid shows have the toy markets. Like, it's all... extra ways to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it shows how the world's adapting to internet life now.
Do you think we could do with more, kind of?
If you haven't watched the first series of Knights of Cydonia, and you've got Netflix, definitely give it a watch.
Oh, yeah. So it's like 3D animated with cel shading and...
If you liked Attack on Titan, it's a similar sort of theme. A little bit more sci-fi, but a similar sort of theme. But a bit heavier, and a lot, you'll get a lot more out of it if you put the time in.
Yeah.
Plus, there's a bear with a robot hand. How can you beat that?
Yeah. I think it beats Attack on Titan in terms of its story.
Oh, yeah. But I'm just saying that, like, more people will have seen Attack on Titan as a base.
Oh, God, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, I mean, if you enjoyed that sort of thing and you'd like to get into to more stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, check out Knights of Cydonia. It's definitely worth watching.
Yeah. The question I was going to ask was, do you think TV... normal TV that everyone has access to could do with more kind of anime channels, because you got Toonami, but I can't think of anything else aside from that shows anime.
A lot of places tried. They tried to set up an anime channel a few times. They've tried, like, Sci-Fi Channel had a bit of animation.
Sci-Fi Channel, but that was kind of popular during the 90s and then died to death, and then they tried to bring it back and it just didn't work at all. Film 4 showing over this fortnight all of the Ghibli films.
Mm-hmm.
And
that kind of every year.
Not all of the Ghibli films. Ghibli films that they have...
That they have the license to. Yeah.
Yes. But they've still got one a day for the next 2 weeks.
Well, that's actually working out as two a day, because late at night... there's actually another one showing.
All right.
Last night was Ocean Waves. Mm-hmm. The night before was the Little Norse Prince. So there's some days where it's two, some days where it's one.
Yeah.
I don't know why Little Norse Prince and Ocean Waves were shown so late. But, you know, because it would have been nice to have watched them during the day. But they're actually quite popular.
When you say that, like mainstream TV, will it start showing more anime?
Not mainstream TV. I mean, with all of the channels we have available.
The thing that I think most is the anime fans and that sort of thing have their place to find stuff. They go to the internet, they have their websites. And it's so convenient to just watch all this stuff when you want.
Unless
trying to get them back to TVs.
Unless there's a hook, like it's stuff airing, first showing. Like
there
the
is
one,
a different type
like
of hook you can go for. Because airing, first showing, the license for that is going to be expensive. But if you go and you chase after older shows that haven't been on TV for a long time,
they can find them on the internet.
They can find them on the internet, but it's just not the same. It's not the same.
But someone else's a TV schedule is beholden to someone else, whereas I can watch whatever I want, whenever I want.
I know.
With something like Crunchyroll.
I know. I'm not talking about you or Ben or anything like that. I'm talking about...
But I'm saying that the animation audience are clued up enough generally to find it on the internet.
And I'm talking about expanding the audience to people who don't have the same access. I mean, let's put it this way. Stuff like Toonami, for example. Right, it's showing Dragon Ball, it's showing Kill la Kill, it's showing...
But that was before people had the access to find it on the internet.
I know, but it's still going. And it's still bringing in more new people to anime because they'll learn how to have access to anime once they're into anime. But if you want to get a normal person, an average person who isn't really au fait with anime, knows a couple of shows, but you know, is kind of in and out, not really a fan...
I think there's different ways to do it. I think looking at TV to do it isn't the right way now. I think that the TV audience is getting older, and it's getting a lot less people watching TV now.
I'm suggesting TV is purely because you have internet TVs now.
So I think the best way to expand an anime audience is not to make dedicated anime channels, but to merge anime into normal programming. I mean, a lot of kids, the first time I watched anime, I know it was anime. It was Pokemon. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that was anime.
It gets a bit tricky when you're talking about merging it into normal programming.
Pokemon was like, I'd watch Ed, and Eddie and then watch an episode of Pokemon.
Yeah. Things like Pokemon, Cardcaptor Sakura, Sailor Moon, they were all put in programming blocks with other kids' shows and they weren't, weren't told that it was anything different, anything special, anything.
Exactly. But I mean,
that's the best way I think to do it because
But what you've got to understand is it's very common. This is one of the reasons why we have some issues with the rating system in the is here in the UK and over in America, is because a lot of people still don't understand certain shows may look child friendly, but they are so not. Shadow Star Narutaru is a prime example.
Oh yeah, but there are anime that are made for a child demographic. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, there's loads of them. All I'm saying is because there's so many, and because people aren't au fait with anime who are making these decisions, they'll basically say, "Okay, this looks cute and child friendly," and then next thing you know, you've got something like Shadow Star Narutaru being shown, you know, in amongst kind of whatever kids shows you have.
Like, yeah. They're going to have to do a bit of extra legwork to work out.
That's what I'm saying. They need to do that extra legwork.
But it's going to be more effort to start a new dedicated channel.
No, I mean, I could imagine with what you're saying, Ben.
I could imagine them throwing something like the new series of... If they got a nice dub on it, throwing something like the new series of Jewel Pets into...
Yeah,
like a children's programming block.
Yeah,
no issue with that.
Let me assist. Using Kill la Kill as an example.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Kill la Kill... with everything that it is, could you imagine that being shown at 4 o'clock on a terrestrial channel?
No, but it wasn't shown at 4 o'clock in Japan.
Yeah, but that's my point. Here, that's in Japan. Here in the West, you have people who aren't familiar with anime making the decisions. They're the ones who...
But they also don't show South Park at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, but South Park is something that they know about. It's a known quantity.
So like I said,
anime is still an unknown quantity to a lot of people in TV.
Legwork.
As you said, Ben, they'd have to do more legwork. I actually think it's a really good idea.
But all they have to do is watch a couple of episodes and they'll get to grips with what it is. But it is trying to find producers and... network execs who are willing to put in the time to do that.
Exactly.
But it's easier than making your own programs.
It's easier than making your own programs, and I think Ben has hit on what is the best idea.
So, like I said, this is why the internet's doing so good at like the whole animation thing, is because people just decide what they want to watch, and a word of mouth is what spreads it.
Yeah. And anyway,
Netflix, you can put on all the child locks and everything if you.
Yep. Netflix is in. There's a lot of anime on there that I'm just like, I watch because I'm like, hey, I've got it there, might as well.
Yeah, it's there. I watched all the way through Samurai Flamenco.
Yeah.
If I was watching that as individual episodes, not as a marathon thing, I would have given up at episode 13.
Yeah.
But actually sticking through at the end of the series, it gets good again.
The last four episodes, I think, is where it gets good again.
Oh, yeah.
After the episode that ends with him telling the people of Japan to escape while they can.
But the last
block of episodes.
Definitely good. Yeah. But, like, I would have switched off at episode about 11, 12, 13.
Yeah. Because it just kind of where it sucked. But because, there's no better way to put it.
Netflix, you can watch it in a block.
Yeah.
I actually, like, did, and it got better. So, yeah. Like, it's a good way to watch something sometimes.
Yeah, like, it doesn't have that separation of, I need to click to the new page, I need to do this.
Yeah. Anyway, shall we move on? The Animation Supporters is a non-profit organization in Japan right now. You know, there's this common, amongst the people that I speak to who are anime fans, there's a common misconception that, anime being an industry, everybody gets paid well. They don't.
Oh, yeah.
They don't.
If you find anything out about the animation industry in Japan, you'll find out the hours, the
long hours, the low pay. They've opened a low-income animated dorm in Tokyo's Asagaya district. I think it's a great move for them. I hope they actually manage to open more of these, because these aren't government funded, and being the kind of a national export, I think anime needs government funded dorms for these animators. They need to be subsidized better.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame that the people making the money off it aren't the people producing the craft.
Exactly.
It is from things like we were saying, like the merchandise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you need the show itself to...
Yeah, the show is basically the biggest marketing campaign for a toy.
Yeah.
And the toys would not sell half as well if it wasn't for those shows.
Yeah, exactly. I hope this is the start of some more low-cost housing for animators, because they do deserve it.
See, what would be better than like low-cost housing for them is just to start paying them better.
Well, yeah, because better pay.
The amount of effort they're putting in, they sort of deserve it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to remember who it was, but I was reading an interview with an animator, and he's like, yeah, animation in Japan is suicidal.
Yes,
like,
it is.
I was asked to join a project there, and I was like, oh my god, it's Japan, I'll get to work on anime. And I got paid like more in like a month of working a Western job than I did like my entire time on a Japanese job.
Yeah.
So yeah, pay your animators well. They're doing a good job for you.
Yeah. Right, and our final news story, and this is not an April Fool's thing, because you guys checked.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys checked.
Well, we have to check as far as we can tell.
Because this new story was broken late on the night of March 31st.
March 31st, yeah.
And in Italy, this would have been on April Fool's Day that this went live.
Yeah.
But we've double-checked and went to all the big sports sites and found out, it's actually true.
Yeah. AC Milan, a world-famous football club, has players who they pay millions to, and they have announced a brand new partnership deal on merchandising and stuff like that with Sanrio's Hello Kitty.
The most obvious of choices, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, the image...
This confuses the hell out of me.
Yeah. I mean, it may be that AC Milan, you may have tapped the male demographic as much as you can.
Yeah, so you're trying to appeal to more of a female demographic.
Maybe. I don't know why Hello Kitty is now...
Maybe they're trying to get little girls into football now. Well,
apparently they're going to create a new collection, which is going to be launched mid-April at the San Siro Stadium, and Hello Kitty will also be pitch side for the occasion.
Well, famously, Japan's mascot in the last World Cup was Pikachu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are we going to get all sorts of Japanese products that advertise, well, mascots. They do make good mascots, don't they?
Yeah. It's just, I mean, this is, number one, this is Italy, and their passion for football is almost unrivaled.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Italian footballers tend to be, tend to think that they're the manliest of men.
And number three, is there anything that Hello Kitty's face is not on yet?
And number four, Inter Milan, AC Milan's arch rivals, are probably, they've probably wet themselves from laughing so much.
Or just they're busy, like, trying to find that licensing deal, like...
Oh, no. Do you know what they're going to go with? They'll probably go with Puka.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Is this Doraemon? We need something on
No, that's Lazio.
I admire them for questioning normal gender norms and...
Yeah.
Like, we're going to get a little cute cat to be our mascot for the big manly football games. So it's a very odd choice, but I guess who has a better marketing campaign group than Hello Kitty?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is true.
They are huge. They have video games, TV series, comics. You've probably seen Hello Kitty everywhere. Even if you've never seen Hello Kitty, like, any of the physical content.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
I know people who have Hello Kitty dolls that don't know anything about Hello Kitty past the fact they have a doll of it.
Be careful of Doraemon, though, because Doraemon turns up in the weirdest places. Remember the building we used to be in? There was a little corner shop next to it that sold Doraemon spinning tops.
Yeah.
I was like... This is like a shop in the middle of nowhere. You know, it sells groceries.
Yeah. He is everywhere, despite no one knowing him as well.
Yeah, it's like, what? So, yeah. Anyway, that was the news.
Hello, this is Ryan from the Geek Show Podcast Network. Do you like trees? What about paper? What about words? Yes, words are good. Then you will like Literally Loitering, unavailable on the Geek Show Podcast Network.
Welcome back to Keyframe. We are now on our review section. And I believe Rob has something to talk about.
Foxy Pirates. Yes, I'm going to talk about Foxy Pirates in One Piece.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yes.
Actually, I think there is an anime called Foxy Pirates. I'm sure I've seen
it. No, it's Bodacious Space Pirates.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
And I watched it. I thought, there's nothing bodacious about them.
Okay. Can you tell me about these Foxy Pirates?
Yes, One Piece. It's One Piece Series 9 from... One Piece Part 9, I should say, from Manga Entertainment. And it kind of covers the section in between, I think it was Sky Island and Water 7.
Okay.
Basically, there's the after effects of Sky Island when they end up at that kind of marine... you know, prison type thing, and they're trying to escape, but they have like the moving island, and then they run into the Foxy Pirates, which is kind of one of the bigger sections in this, because the Foxy Pirates have their challenge to Luffy, and Luffy loses Chopper in this challenge because the Foxy Pirates basically cheat at every turn. And then, you know, in the end, the Straw Hat Pirates win, and then they end up at Water 7.
Okay. Was this an arc that was actually in the manga?
Because
I can't remember.
I don't actually recall it from the manga. I'll have to go back and check.
It might just be something I don't remember that much, because like,
yeah,
I tend to remember the big events in One Piece rather than like the little things that happen along the way.
You know, it's that Davy back. If you remember, it's the Davy back fight that they have with the Foxy Pirates, which is it's all sorts of weird events that they have, and they lose Chopper. Because the leader of the Foxy Pirates, or whatever his name, Foxy Fox, Foxy Bingo, I don't know.
Mr. Fox.
Yes. He wants Chopper.
Okay.
Because he's cute.
Chopper is cute. Chopper is a little anthropomorphic chibi reindeer.
Yes.
Oh, that one with the blue hat and the antlers coming out.
Yes. Yeah. You've probably seen him on all sorts of merchandise.
Oh, yeah. He's
also really tsundere as well, isn't he?
He's the ship's doctor.
He's also really tsundere. Well, if you say anything nice about him, he'll just he'll get embarrassed and kind of do a go. He'll actually do a Ben. He'll get embarrassed and do all the arm thing. You're not going to persuade me by saying that, you so-and-so.
Please, I don't get embarrassed.
But, right, okay, so...
Anyway, yes, this
part
is the
nine.
Part 9. It's when One Piece was still kind of, you know, it found its feet to a degree, but it was still kind of getting its teeth in order so it could take a big bite out of everyone. Where this was in the run-up to everything that happened at Enies Lobby and everything that happens after that.
Yeah.
You know, the Marineford arc, the Impel Down arc, everything, all of those bits. And you can tell kind of at this point that it's gearing up towards something big, especially when it gets to Water 7. You can tell that this big change is going to happen. The biggest change being them losing the Going Sunny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thousand Sunny.
The Thousand Sunny.
No, the Going Merry. The Going Merry's the first ship.
Yeah, the Going Merry, sorry. The Thousand Sunny is the one that afterwards. Yeah. The Going Merry. Which, I've got to say, it was really heartbreaking the way they did it in the anime.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good the way they did it in the manga, but the way they did it in the anime was really heartbreaking. Never thought I'd shed tears over a ship, especially an animated one.
Yeah.
But it was really well done. Anyway, I've got an issue with this. You know, I love One Piece, and the Japanese dub is fine. The extras are fine, because there are extras on the four discs. It's mainly episode commentary and clean opening, closing. You know, everything is fine, except for the audio when it comes to the English dub. And the English dub is generally not bad.
Okay.
But for some reason, and I don't know why, I think it might be a QC issue more than anything else. When you switch to the English dub, you have to raise the volume.
Okay.
Because literally, it's like, you know, the Japanese dub, you'll have the volume at the correct level, and it'll be comfortable to listen to. But then if you switch to the English dub, all of a sudden, the volume drops like a stone. You know, it's
but the
like
levels are still all right, though. Like the
everything's balanced. It's just the volume drops like a stone. It's as if you've gone partially deaf all of a sudden.
Okay.
So it's I think it's mainly a QC issue.
All right. Well, yeah. Most people are going to stick with one or the other, aren't they?
Yeah, most people are going to stick with one or the other. So it's just something that I felt I should mention.
I must switch my audio choices halfway through every episode just to make sure.
Well, for the purposes of a review, unfortunately, it's something that we've got to do. But, you know, I felt it's an issue that I should raise because it is there and it is noticeable, you know. And some people might think there's something wrong with their DVD player or their laptop, whatever they're playing it on.
Oh, the wrong thing is you're using dubs, not subs.
Yeah, I agree.
No, sorry. Random sweeping controversial statement.
Yes, it's because your hair is like that today, Dave. Exactly.
Okay.
I always make the argument of Baccano and Space Dandy.
Oh, yeah, there are some good dubs.
Yeah. But
Cowboy Bebop was good as well.
Yeah. Like, good dubs are amazing, but bad dubs are unbelievably bad.
Well, the One Piece dub...
There's no middle ground, usually. Yeah,
the One Piece dub has been pretty good so far. I mean, it's not made any of the Four Kids mistakes.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Like, oh, I have this lollipop with me all the time.
Yes. So, yeah.
Nami's mother wasn't sent to a dungeon.
Yeah. it's not been bad, and you know whoever they got to play the character of Chopper is doing a really good job as well.
Okay, cool.
So yeah. Anyway, moving on to Ben.
Yes, this week I've been watching The Ambition of Oda Nobunaga.
Oda Nobunaga, is it?
Yeah,
Nobunaga.
No, it's a
no. It's
thing.
Not Nobunaga.
Oh right, okay. I thought
it's
you were
Oda Nobunaga,
the historical figure.
No,
it's Oda Nobunaga. I know exactly what Ben's talking about.
In this, Yoshihara, Haru even, is a 17-year-old schoolboy who finds himself sent back in time for knowledge beyond his. He just finds himself in the middle of, like, a battlefield with samurai and dragoon, and things are going crazy. He doesn't know what he's doing there. He doesn't know how he ended up there, but he is now there. And he finds himself saving a girl who ends up to be Nobunaga, who is
Nobunaga,
who is the leader of basically her clan. But he is very well versed on this area of this period of time because he's obsessed with a game called The Ambition of Nobunaga.
Oda Nobunaga. Oda Nobunaga.
The real Nobunaga.
The real one.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
Nobunaga.
But this is sort of like, so he's been sucked into the past in an alternate world where all the major generals and main people in this war are cute young girls.
Yes.
Right, okay. So there's many games on Oda Nobunaga. Things like you've probably played half of them, like Sengoku Basara.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Onimusha.
Yep.
Yes.
He's even in anime like Ninja Scroll.
Oh, God, yeah. I've actually lost count of the number of manga that feature Oda Nobunaga.
So it's an alternate retelling of that time in history.
Yes, where everyone is a...
Does it have other like famous people like Date Masamune, for example? Or...
Date Masamune, and yeah, I've seen this. It basically is basically Oda Nobunaga.
Yeah, it's got like a lot of the major players, but all as cute young girls. Some like really small. There's like a ninja with a lisp who's like looks about five. He gets basically drafted into her clan and is dubbed Monkey. Because of mispronunciation of his words, he's dubbed Monkey.
Okay.
So he's now basically working for... And he's using his knowledge he has of all the games he's played to try and basically win the war.
Right, okay.
Keep history on the right path, but make changes here and there. It's like he knows like events that are going to happen that will be stupid. So he's like, no, like... This is what's going to happen. So if you just give up now, everything's fine. Because you're going to give up later anyway.
But you won't lose thousands of men in the process.
Exactly.
Or you won't.
Although they have no problem losing. People die all the time, just like, and no one bats an eyelid unless you're a named character.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, even like the bad guys are named. And at the end, they're like, oh, we'll let you go now.
So it's basically like Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just about 200,000 people died here.
So what?
You're just letting the general go.
Is it meant to be some sort of like? Is it meant to be slightly educational with his history? Or
I don't think so. It's very comedy sort of harem thing going on.
The example I could think of a similar thing is. So you said it's this period of history, but all the generals are girls.
Yeah,
small girls. I've seen a series of Gundam.
Yeah,
where. That same period of history, all the characters are chibi Gundams.
Yeah. Except besides the names, not a lot seems to be that accurate.
This, basically, right, it's not as extreme, but it's basically the cute girls do cute things in cute ways version of Ikki Tosun to Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Well, Romance of the Three Kingdoms is China, but...
No, yeah, but Ikki Tosun is basically Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Yes, okay.
You know, that's what Ikki Tosun is based on. This is basically the kind of cute girls do cute things version of that kind of...
Like the Warring States period of Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he has interesting ideas going. I like him using, like, his knowledge. He's, like, he's using modern-day, building tactics. Because they're trying to build a castle on this plot of land that keeps getting attacked. But if they can get a castle to defend it, they can win.
Yeah.
But every time they go in to try and build it, they get burnt down, nothing happens. So he's like, hey, what we do in the future is build everything separately, far away, then put it together on the site. So why don't you do that? And we'll do it at night so no one can see.
Yeah.
And so...
They basically build a castle in one night.
Yeah.
So like the IKEA version.
Yes.
Flat pack castle, basically.
It is.
Stuff with... he's using his knowledge of the future... To go, hey, yeah, like, because everyone thinks she's crazy. She's like, the world's a globe. This is Japan, the tiny island. And everyone thinks she's crazy for saying this. And like, nah, this is this.
I've just realized it is basically a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. That's effectively what it is.
The
thing about it, though, it's sort of a nothing series, if you ask me.
Is it basically, I'm guessing, the harem aspect and the main character seems, from what you've described, seems to be you're meant to identify with him because he's a guy who's only like his only like talent is video games.
Yes,
so
and historical video games.
Yeah,
and it's like this unlikely hero has found the one niche where he's a special snowflake.
So there's
and
like
important.
A thing like you're gonna become a soldier for me. But I need to have a task to make sure you're right. So here is a limited amount of money. You need to get way more rice than what this money's... Like, more money than this... Blah. More rice than this money's worth.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh no, I did this in the game all the time. If you buy this here, go up here, they buy it for more. And like he's like rolling in the money. I'm like, by the way, did you remember to buy the rice? I'm like, oh, I got wrapped up in the money making. I've been doing this for too long. Got one more night. I've got this afternoon to get all the rice. Is that like, it's got funny moments like that, but for the most part, I just found it a bit bland. Mm-hmm. There was nothing really going on that interested me that much.
Yeah.
And the fact that like everything always boiled down to, look, it's a cute girl.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, there's this master tactician. Oh, it ends up it was a cute girl. It's like, oh, we'll find the base camp and attack the base camp so that we can kill their leader before they've got a chance to attack us. Oh, it's a cute girl, we'll let her go. It's like, and he's just a bit...
Get next time, backer.
Yeah, it sort of all boils down to that all the time, constantly. And it's like veg out watching, basically.
Right, so there's not really any drama or suspense.
No, not really. Just for the most part, I'm just sat there like going...
Or any real consequence to...
Yeah, like they hint at consequences and then they take it back instantly. It's like he needs to get the information back and he gets attacked by a ninja and he's bleeding out and he managed to get back just in time and then it's not mentioned again. Mm. Like, he was just all right. He was on the battlefield after that. It's like, and like one of the little ninja girl got shot and it looked like she died. But then at the end of the battle, she wakes up like, oh, I was knocked out. Oh.
One of those concussive arrows.
Yeah. It's like, I'm wearing armor. The shock knocked me out for a little bit. I'm like...
He was only using a tranquilizing sword.
So, yeah, he's just... Yeah, it's a bit of a nothing thing. It's great for just, like, watching in the background, just, like, veg out for a bit. You don't want anything too heavy, but...
For some reason, it sort of reminds me of Dog Days from what you've said there.
Oh, yeah, that's a good comparison, actually. He's got very much the same feeling behind
like
it.
Like, it's about war, but there's no real consequence.
Yeah. It's like, loads of people die, you just don't care about those people, so we don't even show them dying. We mention how they died, but we don't care, they're not characterised.
This is true, they all wore red shirts.
Yeah, basically.
Right, me again?
Yep.
Right, this is Bleach.
Bleach.
Yes, Bleach, Series 14, Part 2.
Okay.
Now, this is right at the end of the original story that Tito Kubo wanted to end on before he was told not to.
So, right, where
the final Getsuga Tensho.
Okay, so it's like the right of the fall of the Arachne.
Of the Aizen.
The Espada are all dispatched.
Basically, well, this is actually right at the end. Mm-hmm. Basically, it starts off with a filler episode where everyone's kind of a dreamlike state. Everyone's dressing up in costumes as like Halloween monsters, stuff like that. Then it gets right back into the action.
Ichigo's taking
on his inner hollow,
mm-hmm.
you know, to get control.
In his inner world.
In his inner world.
With the sideways skyscrapers.
To get control of Tensa Zangetsu, right? This is when his dad is teaching him about the final Getsuga Tensho. Then Ichimaru Gin betrays Aizen.
Mm-hmm.
And Aizen basically kills him, and then you have that episode where he's remembering.
It's a really cool episode for Gin.
Episode where he's remembering his life, you know, with Rangiku.
Because Gin has been one of the main antagonists throughout the series. He's been like a character that you're meant to hate.
Yeah, but you actually empathize with him a lot.
He reveals his entire purpose was to get as close to the main villain as possible.
Yeah.
So he could deliver the killing blow.
Yeah.
So he's been doing the horrible things for the right reason. That, you know, that he recognized that this guy was a threat and needed to be stopped. So he got into his inner circle.
Yeah, playing the long game.
Basically, yeah. Anyway, Aizen gets his new evolution and then him and Ichigo...
What's that? Aizen is evolving.
Yes, Aizen evolves again.
He goes from Metapod to Butterfree, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. It is a very Butterfree evolution, you know. Or it could have been, you know, Venonat to Venomoth. We don't know.
No, he does a Metapod bit at where he gets the hard skin and then comes out.
Yeah, he does, actually. But then...
It's a beautiful
and then And then Ichigo turns all emo, you know, which is basically his final evolution, or supposedly final evolution. We know it's not now. But yeah, The final gets a Tensho, and Aizen basically poos himself and goes, "Oh, you can't be stronger than me." And it's like,
it's actually kind of a satisfying end to the series. If yeah, the series it, ended is, there,
that
it
was
been a...
that was where it was supposed to end. You know, the aftermath of that happens, and then it goes into filler again, yes. Starting off with the new adventures of the Karakuri Riser, which is basically Con.
In his like Kamen Rider kind of parody.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. There's other filler episodes that happen after that, but they're of no consequence. The main meat of this is the final fight between Aizen and Ichigo. Mm-hmm. And I liked the final fight between the two of them. It was, as you said, it's a satisfying conclusion, and especially the whole bit about Ichigo accepting afterwards that his powers are fading. Mm-hmm. He's no longer going to be able to see dead yeah. spirits and
when
stuff
he
like
trains
that.
With Zangetsu, he's told the consequence of learning the final Getchiga Tensho yeah. is once you've performed it, that's
you know,
all your power's gone.
If it ended Bleach there, if it ended it there, I would have been happy with that ending. Mm-hmm. You know, I would have said, that's well done. Good ending. You know, it's a good, solid ending. I would have forgiven most of the filler that happened up to that point and said, yep, I'm happy with that ending. That's a good way to end the series.
But it even has a sort of unrequited, you know, the shipping.
Yeah.
Where he can't ever see Rukia again.
Well, yeah, he can't ever see Rukia again. So there's the bittersweetness, the fact that the hero had to sacrifice something in order to save the day, something that's a major part of him, you know, that he's had for his entire life. It had basically everything you want from that heroic ending.
There was a few bits at the ending that they threw in to extend it, essentially.
Yeah.
Aizen mentions the Spirit King.
Yeah.
Who's never been seen or heard of until that point.
Yeah.
Well, no, we've actually heard of the Soul King in the very early episodes of Bleach because
it hasn't been an important thing.
It hasn't been an important thing because you know the Gotei 13. They're not the rulers of Soul Society.
And,
they just it's police force.
Mr. Hatton Clogs, I've forgotten his name. But he upon sealing Aizen,
yeah, Urahara is it?
Urahara. Yeah. He mentions things that suggest that the intentions of the Soul Society were not entirely altruistic.
Yeah.
So
room 43 or wherever they
yeah.
You know, they're the ones who secretly control society, ostensibly on the orders of the Soul King, but they have their own agenda.
Yeah.
If it had just finished at that point, I think the manga and the anime, if they'd finished it at that point, it would have been good. In fact, it would have been one of the better endings in anime and manga. But, you know, he was forced to continue, and because he was forced to continue, we ended up with more filler. And we ended up with the current situation in the manga, which I'm not going to go into because it's completely ridiculous.
The actual point where the anime does end isn't as satisfying.
No, no way.
It's almost a tune in next week.
Yeah.
But next week never comes because the anime has finished for now.
Exactly.
It seems a shame when they had that last moment where he has to give up basically his connection to all of the dead. He has to sever that connection.
He had an entire episode dedicated to that.
It's sort of poetic and amazing that he's doing this, and it shows real heroic traits, and then it's sort of just written off.
Yeah, I mean,
a couple of episodes later when, oh, now you can see the dead people again. And,
well, no, it wasn't a couple of episodes later. Well, it was a movie later.
That's often how they end, like, a Sentai series, for example.
Yeah.
The start of the series, they're given powers to fight off a big bad.
Yeah.
They eventually get to the big bad and usually have to sacrifice all their powers in order to defeat the final enemy.
I like that because it puts weight to things.
Yeah.
You have to give up something that's become part of you to win this. And the fact that they can just then give it back for convenience of...
What was it? Apparently...
or whatever.
In the Hellverse, apparently all the captains put their Reatsu into this sword and I'm going to stab you with it and you will be a Shinigami once more. Only this time you have hell powers. And no.
You have powers for reasons.
Also, you can tell just how misogynistic that movie is by, you know, when they're getting tortured in hell? The fact that the guys get tortured before Rukia, right? But they're still wearing the same clothes that that they had on before they were getting tortured, whereas Rukia is the only character who actually emerges from the torture naked and has to be clothed in white.
Mm. So, yeah, I'd say for completionist's sake, it's probably a recommend in terms of you're getting a good satisfying ending to the series.
Yeah, it's just then it has like 4 episodes extra of filler.
Yeah.
It kind of sucks that you get, like, all these beautiful moments in the anime, and then the extra bits.
The Aftermath episode is, you know, it is all the feels in the Aftermath episode, because everybody is basically, you know, they want to spend the last day that with Ichigo, the last day that he can see them, because he won't be able to see them after that. Obviously, you know, with Chad and Orihime, he's going to see them, because they just live in his world. But he's not going to be involved in, you know, there's a scene in, I think, the Aftermath episode where they run off to deal with the situation and he can't help them.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing he can do anymore, you know? And that really highlighted things and really kind of set it in stone. This is the end for him. It's no longer his story. Someone else is going to take over. And that should have been it.
If they wanted to carry on, they could have carried on the story of someone else that got a billion other characters.
Well, why not continue on with Chad, with just Chad and Orihime?
Well, essentially, the next arc, the Fullbring arc, is the first time they even try to explain Chad and Orihime.
Yeah, I know.
You know, who just get powers because.
Yeah. And Orihime is basically
magical hair clips.
Yeah, Orihime is basically the ultimate reset button. I'm sorry, she can reset anything that God has created.
Yep.
Yeah.
What? So yeah, she can even reset death.
Yep. Isn't her thing like she rejects healing power? She can actually reverse the damage.
She can reject reality. She can reject the situation. Simply.
It was one of the reasons why Aizen wanted her in the first place was because of her ability.
Yeah.
She's like the most one of the most overpowered characters I've seen in manga and anime ever.
But I do kind of like it when, hey, the side character that no one really thought about, yeah, they're actually the ultimate boss.
Yeah.
Sort of like the cheerleader in Heroes.
Yes. Like, everyone
wants to realize how overpowered her ability was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, nothing could kill her, so.
I'm sorry, she had a branch in her head, and then they took it out, and she was fine again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She cut off her toe.
Yeah.
She's like, nope, that's fine.
But yeah, so, yeah.
Probably. If you're as a completionist, yes, it's a recommend. But if you're not a completionist, then you know if you're a fan of just shonen, there are better. There's Hitman Reborn. There's One Piece. There's Hunter x Hunter. Please go watch that instead. Bleach is definitely one just for the fans.
But it's been going for years, so people may have become a fan of it years ago before they became aware of other things, and it's nice to complete things.
Yeah, the anime is only 366 episodes. This is episodes 304 to 316.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 12 episodes. So it is basically for people who want to complete their collection.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of the actual anime itself, at this point, it's started getting a bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard not to after the 300th episode.
This is true. Well, I mean, as I said, it was fine. The final gets a good Tencho bit. Those were all great.
Yeah.
It's all the filler that surrounds it. Just ruins it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, right. We're unfortunately at the end of the show.
Yep. Catch us at thegeekshow.co.uk and hit us up on the Facebook.
Stay tuned. Next week, we'll have a brand new episode of Keyframe out for you. And for every week until weeks stop happening.
Yes. We'll be here for all time.
I've been Ben.
I was a Dave.
And I was a Rob. We'll see you all later.
Bye.